thanks to a new NCAA rule change, student athletes in college are now allowed to profit from their name, image, or likeness.
What's going on, everybody? Graham Mertz here. I'm excited to announce I'm officially dropping my merchandise website, grahammertzshop.com. I'm going to put it in the caption under here, but we'd love for you guys to go check it out, buy some sweet gear, and I appreciate the support. There's more to come.
That was Graham Mertz, as you just heard, a sophomore quarterback for the Wisconsin Badgers football team, in a video posted on Twitter on July 1st. And that was also the day the rules change went into effect. We're going to be talking more about the changes and UW's temporary policy for managing it. Rich Kramer is WPR's higher education reporter, and I spoke with him on Friday about the change. Here's our conversation. So as of right now, this is a temporary policy. So what are the students allowed to do and what aren't they allowed to do with this current policy?
Well, it's all very complicated for me. I'm a higher education reporter, but I don't follow sports law very often, if at all, I should be honest. But what students are allowed to do right now is the temporary rules from the NCAA, and there are temporary rules at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. They can profit off of their name, image, and likeness. So, you know, think of bobbleheads, t-shirts, autograph signings. These are the things that we're starting to see college athletes wade into. So that was not allowed under the previous NCAA rules.
And but what they can't do right now, it seems, is use the University of Wisconsin's logos. Am I correct there?
From the temporary rules that I read at with the University of Wisconsin-Madison, students are able to use the university's logos, but there's a whole process for getting prior approval, and it seems pretty complicated. So I'm not entirely sure. The Badgers quarterback, Graham Mertz, has already taken advantage of this and issued a clothing line, and it does have pictures of him, like caricatures of him in his uniform, but there's not any obvious Badgers logos or Wisconsin logos. So it seems like he's playing it safe, and that could speak to the nature of that rule.
Let's stick with Graham Mertz for a second. That's a Badger quarterback. And I'm actually looking at his shirts right now, and it looks like they're using, or that Graham and his affiliates are using, you know, the UW-Madison, the red and white colors. He's doing these action shots where he's like clearly playing for the football team. Have any other players jumped on this bandwagon?
Not that I've seen. Graham Mertz has really gone all in with the clothing line. He even teased it. He had a video that he put on Twitter prior to the NCAA rule change going into effect, which was July 1st. So 2 days prior, he basically put a teaser video out that hinted at his upcoming logo. So he's got a special logo. It's got a GM, you know, branded thing. And also, you know, and then on July 1st, he said he's got this merchandise site. And like you mentioned, it's all kinds of options. There's, you know, the t-shirts, the hoodies, there's baby clothes. So as far as Badgers players, he's the only one to go that far. But Graham Mertz also tweeted that Mission Barbecue, which has restaurants around Wisconsin, is the official sponsor or barbecue sponsor for the Badgers offensive line. So I don't know what the nature of that agreement is. I don't know if that means they get free food or if they're getting, you know, paid a little bit. I have no idea.
Yeah, let's stick with that for a second, Rich, because Mission Barbecue has said that they're proud to sponsor the offensive line. But you talked to some other business owners who could profit off of this as well. What did you hear from other businesses?
Yeah, I basically was digging through the replies to Graham Mertz's his initial tweets about his merchandise line, and I saw there was a fellow named Tom Kolcheski who owns Real Sports Cards. It's a sports card sales website, but also there's a couple stores, a new one being built in Waupun. So I saw Tom Kolcheski basically reply to Graham Mertz's initial tweet saying, hey, we'd love to have you for an autograph signing. So that raised my interest. I gave Tom a call, and he said he would love to have Graham Mertz at his shop, the one that's being built right now, in Waupun, and do an autograph signing. So what Tom told me is that he doesn't know, you know, he's very well versed in the sports memorabilia realm, but he doesn't know what it's worth. He doesn't know how much these players would get for a signature or how much, you know, they should be paid for such a thing. But he basically has an open invitation to the Badgers quarterback because he'd love to have him over. So Tom Kulchewski pointed out that the quarterback of the Oklahoma Sooners, Spencer Rattler, is doing an autograph signing where he's going to get $150 per signature. That's the way what's been reported. Kulchewski said that's crazy because that's the same amount of money that NFL players get. And he told me that in terms of sports memorabilia, like signed, you know, cards, for example, their worth really goes up once that player transitions to the National Football League and not as valuable in the college uniform. So he said it's basically kind of a new frontier that everyone's going to have to figure out.
So this is a new frontier, and you teased just a few minutes ago that this issue is extremely complicated at the university. What have we heard so far from higher education leadership at UW-Madison?
Well, the only real statement that I've gotten or been able to find comes from Chancellor Rebecca Blank at UW-Madison. She sent a letter to Congress. This was prior to the NCAA's change on name, image, license going into effect. And she was urging the Congress to set federal standards, you know, have a level playing field across the country. She said, you know, these are academic athletes. It's all about amateurism, you know, the collegiate experience. She basically said that she doesn't think they should be paid because they're not professional athletes, that it's all about the education and helping get them well-rounded and have something like a degree once they leave school. But in terms of the federal standards, she said they're necessary because it doesn't take a lot of imagination, she said, to imagine a car dealership somewhere offering a big pile of money to a promising, you know, high school star quarterback to go to one university versus the other. So she said that, you know, right now, states around the country, Florida, for example, have passed their own rules on this, like legislation. Wisconsin hasn't done that yet. So UW-Madison has a temporary policy, but that's it. So she's hoping for federal action. I talked with our Capitol reporter, Laurel White, and she hasn't heard anything about state legislation. So at this point, it's still kind of a gray area.
That was Rich Kramer, WPR higher education reporter. I spoke with him last Friday about his reporting on University of Wisconsin student athletes beginning to take advantage of a rules change, allowing them to profit from their name, image, and likeness. That is a very recent rules change from the NCAA. And we want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about why the NCAA made this decision? What concerns or thoughts do you have as it relates to the college experience for these athletes or for college sports in general? How do you think businesses and brands should approach this situation? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Right now, we're picking up our conversation about the NCAA rules change that now allows student athletes at colleges and universities to sign endorsement deals and make money beyond just the scholarships they receive from their own likeness. And we want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Should student athletes be allowed to make money when they're on a team? Do you think, you know, the NCAA made the right decision here? Maybe if you were a student athlete in the past and you weren't able to profit off your own name and likeness, We want to hear from you, too. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@WPR.org. Ben Strauss joins us now. He covers sports and media for The Washington Post and is the co-author of the book Indentured, the inside story of the rebellion against the NCAA. Ben, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. Nice to be here.
So we've been talking so far about the Wisconsin athletes who have started to take advantage of this rule change, but they're not the only ones in the country, right? What have we heard from other schools and athletes that have decided to take advantage of this rules change?
We've heard from many of them, and just to name a few outside of Wisconsin, the Michigan football team has done a group agreement with one of the local apparel stores in Ann Arbor to get cuts of jersey sales, which is a pretty interesting development. We've seen the quarterback at Alabama sign endorsement deals in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. We've seen women's basketball players at Fresno State enter an agreement, and you know, everything from fast food restaurants to T-shirt companies all sorts of types of things, you know, apparel, for their jerseys and you know, getting a cut of that, as I mentioned. So it's been pretty widespread, you know, the types of the deals, and also, around the country and different types of athletes playing different types of sports too, men and women.
And it seems that the quickness with which these athletes, decided to take advantage of the rules change made it seem a little bit like they've been waiting for this for a long time. Can you give us a little bit of the history of this rules change just over the last few decades even?
Yeah, I mean, so the reason we're talking about this is not, you know, a sports story, but, you know, higher education story and you know, a fairly big deal is that the bedrock of college sports for, decades has been this concept of amateurism, which was, put into place in the 1950s and has, you know, stood for years up until really just a few weeks ago. And the idea is that people, athletes, competed in college sports and were not allowed to earn money outside of a scholarship. And, you know, the NCAA has spent really millions of dollars at this point defending amateurism against lawsuits and a union push by the Northwestern football team a few years ago. And only very recently, the last couple of weeks, really did a total about face and said, you know, we're not going to stand in the way of these states that have passed these laws, and we're going to sort of step aside and really not do the one thing that we've been doing, you know, since the 1950s, and that's enforce these amateurism rules. So huge, huge change that has been challenged in courts and by players and most recently by a number of state legislatures that passed laws. But this was a long time coming.
Yeah. And I'm curious, too, Ben, if we could take kind of like a real zoomed out look. It seems like it's not just a sea change at the university level or among students, but there's been kind of a wider acceptance that kind of the system, the NCAA rules, haven't really been fair. How much has that played a role in maybe the NCAA reevaluating this rule?
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly you look at why state legislatures around the country got interested in this issue and why there have been lawsuits about it. If you just look around, you know, in the last 20 years or so, people started getting very, very rich in college sports, and coaches can make $5, $6, $7, $8, $9 million. The athletic directors can make a couple million dollars. Conference commissioners can be millionaires. The TV contracts are in the billions of dollars. And so when you contrast sort of all of this money that's in college sports with players who, you know, are banned or were banned from participating in any, you know, part of this economy, aside from they get their scholarships and, you know, a few extra benefits, it's really stark. And so as the money got really, really big, you know, in the last 20 years, but really in the last like 10 years, it's been harder and harder to justify this system where, you know, on one side of the equation, you're going to squeeze every single dollar you can out of this enterprise. You know, schools will change conferences because there's more money on the other side. And, you know, coaches will jump around, but players are really prohibited from, you know, joining in this economy. It was getting harder and harder to defend how you could have, you know, two sides of that coin.
We're talking to Ben Strauss right now. He covers sports and media for The Washington Post. He's also the co-author of the book called Indentured, The Inside Story of the Rebellion Against the NCAA. And we just had a caller who could not stay on the line, who said that if college football players already get their tuition paid for, they should not also get paid, that it's not fair to other athletes in sports who would not get treated the same. Are we seeing kind of sort of a built-in inequity with the players and the teams that might get these deals and those that don't?
Well, if you look at the system the way it is today, it's the football team is bringing in all of the money. So, I mean, the inequities are sort of built in by the way the school distributes its resources. It doesn't pay the football coach the same as it pays the gymnastics coach. And the football players and the men's basketball players are, you know, decidedly on campus to do one thing, and that is make money for the school, which is a responsibility no other athletes on campus have. So somehow that there are these NIL deals that some players have access to and others don't is going to be some sort of sea change in equity. I find that, you know, fairly hard to believe.
Now, you have been following this for a really long time. Did you ever expect to see this rule change happen, certainly in the way that it kind of got rolled out?
You know, it's actually a really interesting question. There was a time a few years ago, I think it was 2016, when the Northwestern football team, you know, tried to form a union. And initially it was recognized by the Labor Relations Board in Chicago. And at the same time, there was a big lawsuit about name, image, and likeness, and a former UCLA basketball player sued the NCAA for not, you know, for making money on a video game, but not allowing, you know, the former player to be paid for using his image in the video game. And so those two legal battles really came to a head at the same time, and both initially were victories for the players that on appeal were sort of neutered and, well, not totally overturned, basically had the effect of maintaining the status quo. And in that moment, I thought for sure the system was going to have to change. But then, as I mentioned, the status quo sort of won out, and I wasn't totally sure. So, you know, in some ways, I was very surprised at how quickly it seemed to flip on its head at the NCAA and among some of the schools. But in otherwise, it's really been a long time coming. So I think it's probably a combination of, you know, being very surprised and also not being very surprised at all.
Yeah, I want to go to one of our callers right now. We have Josh in Oak Creek. Hi, Josh.
Hey, guys. I have a question. I'm all for the athletes, you know, getting this. As he just put it, it flip-flopped pretty quick. I'm wondering if there's any evidence or history of this decision being that because it's such a grand change, did the NCAA decide, okay, we'll do this, but do these athletes actually have to give a small percentage of their new earnings to the NCAA? Because it seems to me that the flip-flop was so fast, as you just stated, that you think they wouldn't do it without getting something out of it.
Josh, thank you so much for that call. Ben, do you think that there might be some mutually beneficial work happening in the background that led to this change?
Yeah, it's a fair question given the 180 that seemed to happen, but I don't think so. I think that a couple things happened that made it happen so fast. One was you had all of these, you know, states around the country, you had dozens of states that had passed laws that these new rules were going to go into effect. So they didn't really come out of nowhere. And a lot of them, or some of them, were going to go into effect on July 1st. So the NCAA had this deadline of how it was going to handle these state laws and what it was going to do about name, image, and likeness. So it was sort of this big deadline that was hanging over, you know, the college sports establishment. And then a week before that, the Supreme Court decided a different case, which was not about name, image, and likeness, but was about educational benefits. But the court found unanimously against the NCAA and essentially said that, you know, if there was another court case where, you know, amateurism was going to be on trial, the NCAA couldn't say, you know, amateurism is the secret sauce that we have, and the only reason we have college boards is because of amateurism. It really put a body blow to the NCAA's legal defense. And there was a separate opinion written by Judge Kavanaugh that basically said, if I saw a case that was like, can players get paid, you know, the big case, you know, I don't think that I would be confident in the NCAA's defense. And so this was a really sort of monumental shift in the way the Supreme Court talked about the issue. And it was very just a couple days after that the NCAA announced that they were not going to challenge any of these state laws. So I think that played a fairly significant role, too.
Now, Ben, we only have about 30 seconds left, but what will you be watching for, as the football season gets started with this issue?
One thing that I'm very curious about is we've seen people start to sign deals and you know, it's interesting and exciting. I wonder how recruiting is going to get affected. I think that's one area, you know, what kind of things are, you know, schools going to be able to offer directly to players and boosters and things, and will it actually change any of the, you know, recruiting dynamics? Is there a smaller school that might not be able to compete with Alabama if they're only offering scholarships, but, you know, there's a booster at Marshall or something that, you know, says we really want this player? Like, could, you know, smaller schools compete, you know, for bigger
for talent? Yeah. Ben, we'll have to leave it there, but thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
That's Ben Strauss. He covers sports and media for The Washington Post. We talked with him about the recent NCAA rules change that allows student athletes to profit from their name, image, and likeness.